Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Welcome back to Sports with Neil here on Blog Talk Radio. I know it's been a while, and I'm going to take an apology. I'm going to apologize for that right out here at the top of the show. Took some time off, cleared my head. I'm back, though. For those of you who follow sportswithneil.com, you've seen that I'm posting about once a day now, and we are moving forward here with our plans to grow the site and grow the sports community. So we're excited that you could join us tonight and that we're here broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio once again. For those of you who are in the Seattle area, most of my followers are. We're going to start off with local sports stuff at the top of the hour. At the top of the half hour, midway through, we're going to switch to a more national level story scope. It's kind of the structure we're going to roll with here going forward, unless something major pops up. But the big thing going on right now, I know we're gearing up for college football and that the camps have start training camps have started for NFL teams like the Seahawks and the Oakland Raiders. We are in the middle of a pretty insane playoff race in the American League. National League a little more calmed down and settled outside of the NL Central, although the Cubs are starting to pull away from the Brewers. If Milwaukee has a chance to keep this interesting, if they can stay in it, but we'll get more into the in-depth discussion about the MLB playoff race itself. The big thing we want to start off here with is the Seattle Mariners. They went into Kansas City this weekend needing a series split to not lose any ground heading into the their only home 7 games in August, facing the Angels for four with Yeager Martinez weekend. And I believe they've got, let me take a look here, pull up their schedule. I was just looking at it. I apologize. So they have the Angels for four. Angels are kind of hanging in around the playoff place in the playoff race. They're also kind of outside of it a little bit. They are one game under 500 at 55-56 as of this morning. Mariners are 57-56 with the night off. It's a little 7-game homestand they've got here with 4 against the Angels, 3 against Baltimore. Neither of those teams are really in the playoff race, so this is a good chance to make up some ground for Seattle. They also get a chance to make up some ground with the Athletics. They get 2 games in Oakland tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, so tomorrow and Wednesday before coming home. But this is a tough stretch of schedule for them. So coming out of that 4-game series in Kansas City with the series split was huge in not allowing them to lose ground. And you could see that in the way Scott Service managed the second half of the doubleheader. The first game of the doubleheader, emptying out the bullpen when the Mariners had 8-7 lead. And then in the second game, kind of leaving Rosmo Ramirez out to dry with the Royals are just absolutely pounding him inning after inning after inning. But again, they get out of KC with a split. Probably should have won 3 games. That first game, that 2-0 lead they gave up, they had opportunities throughout the night to keep tacking on before they coughed up the lead in the fifth inning when it was tied. And then in the sixth inning, they took the lead again, gave it up again, and gave up two runs in the seventh and one in the eighth. And that just was that loss is what's going to loom large. Coughing up that lead, not taking advantage of the opportunities that were presented to them in August in that game. That's what's going to be costly. Not the series loss to the Astros, who at the beginning of the season, you know, one game matters, yes, but it's one game. The games really count when you know how the playoff race shakes out. We're in that time right now. We saw the Mariners last August completely fall apart, and then recover in September, but it was too little, too late. This year, we're looking at a team that's facing a very rough August schedule. As I said, they only have 7 games in this month, but they only get a grand total of 4 days off in a 31-day month. So that's 28 games they have to play throughout this month, and only 7 of them are at home, 21 on the road. For the remaining games they have, you know, the Angels are still technically in the playoff race. You can put them out of it with a good series win at home. Orioles are not really in it. You get the Orioles for 2 series. Atlanta is another team they get to play that's not out in it at all, aside from Oakland. But they've got 3 tough games against the 20th. They've got 3 tough games against the Yankees from the 25th to 27th in Yankee Stadium. And then they go back to Baltimore to close out the month. Now, this is the key reason I keep going back to the schedule, is to illustrate how important that series split was and how important it is for them not to lose ground in August. If they can get into September hovering around 500, a game and a half, 2 games back in the wild card, when the 40-man rosters expand and they get a chance to get some new blood in the bullpen, new blood in the starting staff from Tacoma, and they're playing teams like Oakland and Texas, who have clearly decided they're selling this season and aren't going to compete. That's big. That's really, really, really big. As for the big news, unfortunately, from this last weekend, we got to see Felix Hernandez go back on the disabled left little 10-day DL stint, pending what's happening with the MRI today in Seattle, which really sucks. Because we were starting, it wasn't like, oh my God, Felix is back, because velocity's gone. It's not coming back. But we were starting to see him get better at locating pitches. If you go to sportsandneal.com, you can take a look at the heat maps. If you're lame, you can go to Fangraphs and look at his heat maps as well. But from July 9th through July 31st, he's commanded significantly better. Balls are lower in the zone. They're in tighter to lefties, further away out of the reach of righties. And as a result, you saw the on-base percentage and batting average drop for right-handed for his opposing batters in the 23 innings he threw so far in the second half. That's a good thing. If Felix can do that, can eat innings, can locate pitches, that puts the Mariners pitching staff in a lot better shape. He's not going to get you 7 innings. He's going to get you 6. But that's a better... You know, that's what they need from him, is they need him to come out and they need him to locate his pitches when he's healthy. Unfortunately, he's clearly not healthy. He's back on the DL. Don't know how long it's going to be, pending the MRI results tonight, today and tomorrow, and the next few days here in Seattle. Also, looking at in other news, the Mariners made a couple of waiver wire acquisitions. One of the ones that left some fans initially scratching their heads was the decision to go out and get Yonder Alonso from the Oakland Athletics for Boog Powell. A couple reasons you want to do that. The big thing is Boog Powell has become a problem child in the organization's farm system. He just got back from an 80-game suspension for drugs for violating the MLB drug policy. Whether it was performance enhancing drugs. He slips up one more time, he's facing a lifetime ban. He hasn't been very productive at the MLB level. He's been in the Pacific Coast League AAA. PCL is where batters need to be putting up their numbers. He wasn't doing that. So the Mariners needed to squeeze whatever value they could in case he accidentally slipped up again. They go out, they get Yonder Alonso. Alonso is a offensively solid batter. He struggled as of late. But what he's good at doing is hitting the snot out of right-handed pitching. Danny Valencia, the Mariners' current everyday first baseman, is not very good at hitting the snot out of right-handed pitching. So what they're going to do is they're going to pair the two friends who grew up in Miami together, who trained together in the offseason. They're going to pair them in a platoon. Lengthen the lineup, and it's pretty clear at this point with the fact that the Mariners have gone through 34 pitchers this year. It's going to be 35 whenever they figure out who they want to throw in for David Phelps' spot, depending on how long Phelps is out, if he's out for a while. But they're looking at 34 to 35 pitchers used this year, a franchise record, and the most in Major League Baseball this season. Knowing that, it's pretty clear the way they're going to sneak into this wild card spot is to mash their way in. The ball all over the yard, score, and score in bunches, as referenced by the 8-7 win on Sunday morning, and the 5-2 win, and then the whole series down in Texas. So the Kansas City Royals, the team the Mariners just faced in the wild card, or in Kansas City for a four-game set. The Royals are looking pretty good. Right now they're a game and a half up on Seattle in the wild card, half a game up over Tampa. They hold that second wild card spot, so if the season ended today, the Royals would be looking to would be traveling to New York to play in the one-game playoff. The Royals, knowing that they needed to add some more depth to their off length in their lineup and add some more depth to their starting staff, went out and got Melky Cabrera and Danny Duffy, who the Mariners absolutely shelled on Sunday morning for that first game of that doubleheader. And these moves are done with the idea that the Royals can not only make a serious run, you know, at the first wild card spot, or a playoff run once if they get in. But they're not that far back in the AL Central either. Kansas City, when I checked this morning, 1 second here. I just had this. I apologize. Kansas City is trailing the Cleveland Indians in the AL Central by 3 games. That's not insurmountable. Kansas City's big problem has been their pitching staff this year, and their defense to a degree in the outfield with a lot of Dyson. But they have a negative 14 run differential, so we'll see how sustainable this is. But they're making a push. You know, they're not going to let Cleveland take that division fairly easily. And they're not going to let the Yankees capture that first wild card spot fairly easily. The options are open to Cleveland or Kansas City. And that's kind of why you saw them make the move they did. It looked like they were going to have to sell at the beginning of the year, but they're not. They're right in the thick of this thing, and they still could. They have a really good – they have a decent shot at winning their division. It's not fantastic or even good, but it's a decent shot, which is more than you can say for anyone in the American League West or the National League West. And that's going to move us on to our next topic, the troublesome Dodgers, who are on pace right now to win 115 ball games. The Dodgers have lost 7 games. Since July 1st. That is an obscene hot streak that LA is on. And they're on this hot streak despite losing Clayton Kershaw to the disabled list with some lower back issues. Now, while the Dodgers are heavily favored to win the AL West, right now they're, they have a gigantic lead over the Colorado Rockies of 15 and a half games, and they're 16 up on the Arizona Diamondbacks. By the way, who aren't schlubs this year? The Rockies are 64 and 48, and the Diamondbacks are 63 and 48, and occupy the two National League wild card spots. But the Dodgers, you know, it's going to take a pretty epic collapse for them to lose the division. Not as bad as it would take for Houston to lose the AL West, but we'll get to the Astros in a little bit. The Dodgers are solid, but the problem for them has been getting through the playoffs to the World Series. And when you're looking at the starting depth they have and the issues they've had with their pitching staff in the postseason, it's basically been Clayton Kershaw and a whole bunch of blah. You're looking at a team that needed to make a move to shore up its pitching staff to make sure that it's deep enough and protects Kershaw whenever he does come back from these lower back issues. So what do the Dodgers do? They give up four prospects, including a top 100 prospect. Calhoun, the last name, I can't remember his first name, I'm sorry. But they give up four prospects, including Calhoun, for Yu Darvish. And they give him up at the deadline, and at the last minute for the MLB trade deadline on July 31st, non-waiver trade deadline on July 31st. And that was a really well-done move for L.A. When Kershaw does come back, it takes pressure off of him. It's not going to force him to be the number one guy. They've got a guy who's been an ace for the last few years down in Texas. They've got a guy who's pretty nasty when he can be, who's an innings eater, which takes pressure off of their bullpen. He gives them a second or a third starter. He gives them the number two starter heading into this postseason, and it makes the job of the coaching staff that much easier here in the playoffs, especially in October. It gives them some more flexibility because they've got some talented lefties there as well. They've got, Alex Wood and Rich Hill, who are healthy right now. You need innings for them. On the right-handed side, they've got Brandon McCarthy, who's a Twitter legend, and you should absolutely follow him, as well as Kenta Maeda, and I apologize if I mispronounce his name. I'm also going to mispronounce this next one because I know I'm going to get it wrong, but Hyunjin Ryu. These are, starters that we've seen L.A. kind of float around and mix and match in the playoff race and with their playoff roster. But now they're able to, it gives them a chance to move one of those guys to the pen come October. It gives them a chance to, by adding Darvish, gives them a more flexibility. I'm going to keep hammering on this point because that's what it was. That was the goal of the move to acquire Yu Darvish. More flexibility, more flexibility, more flexibility. It was an absolutely brilliant trade and probably the move of the deadline. We're talking about teams that have big lead in their division. I hit on Houston earlier. The Astros have a 16-game lead in the American League West. Fangraphs, as of this morning, has their odds at 100% to win the American League West. And that's kind of hard to disagree with. The second-place team is the 57-56 Seattle Mariners, who just lost Felix Hernandez and their new bullpen guy, David Phelps. So there's not much standing in the way division-wise for the Astros. But for start, again, and this is kind of a running theme throughout Major League Baseball this year, starting depth's an issue. McCullers is still nowhere to be found. Dallas Keuchel just came back from the disabled list. And at the trade deadline, Houston did diddly squat. They got Francisco Liriano, who hasn't been particularly good this year, or even decent. They did nothing. And that's not something a team that's looking has a serious shot at winning the World Series this year. Not having played that one-game playoff, getting the division series at least. They do have a very talented starting staff when it's healthy. But you can't just rest on the when it's healthy part because it takes time to get healthy. It takes time to get back in shape after missing a bunch of time. And Dallas Keuchel just proved, because he's been gone most of the year, as Felix Hernandez has proved up in Seattle. As you can point through any number of starting staffs this year, New York with Tanaka, L.A. with Kershaw here as we're getting, he's got the back injury. You can point to Houston's, it takes a lot of time to recover from these kind of injuries. And the Astros should know this with how the season started out for them. And, McCullers isn't anywhere. And they do nothing. Absolutely nothing. I think Dallas Keuchel said it best. He said it mildly when he said it was disappointing. Disappointing. Now one of the best options on the trade market available for starting pitchers, and this is through waivers. He's already cleared the irrevocable waivers. That is Justin Verlander. The problem with Verlander is Detroit wants a prospect haul, which Houston does have, but Detroit wants a prospect haul without having to give up any of his nearly $60 million that are still owed to him. I believe it's $56 million. right around there. And that's not something really that's workable, because you're going to be eating $56 million over the rest of 2018 and 2019. That's a big financial cost to a team. That puts you, even Houston, that'll put near the luxury cap. Houston has the most space of any team that's on their, or the luxury tax, not the luxury cap, but the luxury tax. Houston, who has the most financial flexibility at this point heading into the playoff race, and the most would be financially burdened by Verlander's contract, and he hasn't been that good this season. And that's another problem confronting Detroit. They're looking to shed the contract. They're looking to get prospects back, and he's not doing well. But Detroit still wants what Detroit wants. And that's not at all a workable situation for the teams that have shown or expressed any interest in Justin Verlander. Houston's probably the biggest name associated with them. I know the Dodgers, before they went out and got Darvish, were rumored to be interested in him, the Mariners, the Yankees. Any team that's needed pitching help and is in the playoff race, to Detroit, and Detroit said, yeah, give us your best prospects and eat all of this contract, please. Is Detroit serious about moving Justin Verlander? Their actions seem to indicate they aren't. And that's perfectly A-OK. But as long as he's sitting on there on waivers, there's a chance he could be, you know, it's going to be something that's going to be talked about heading into the waiver trade deadline of August 31st. So we'll see what happens with Detroit. We'll see how Justin Verlander plays out. And, you know, Houston, if they're going to make a playoff run, needs help. And they need starting pitching help almost as badly as the Mariners do. Actually, and that's something that's going to be a problem for them going forward. In other news, I talk a little bit about it, but how about the Rockies? I just brought them up briefly, but how about the Rockies and the Diamondbacks? These are two teams that have kind of been muddling about in the mediocre middle of Major League Baseball for the last couple of years. You know, the Rockies especially have been notorious for being bad and something that people like to, you know, want to make fun of over the last couple of years. Forest Field has been a ghost town. But so far this year, the the Colorado Rockies have been fantastic. They hold the number one wild card spot. The season ended today. They're hosting their division rival Diamondbacks in a one-game wild card playoff. It's not shabby. So it seems like the rebuild in Colorado has gone really, really well. Great news for the fans in Colorado, because that organization looks like it's ready to go for a long time. I'm not sure how far they'll reach in the playoffs this year. Pitching, especially in that ballpark, is a little yay. But again, they've done a lot of good stuff. Bringing it back around to the teams that are in the American League, and then a division race that's going to probably determine the number one wild card spot, and potentially the number one and number two wild card spot, depending on what happens with the Tampa Bay Rays and the Seattle Mariners over the next few weeks. New York and Boston, two teams that did two totally different things at the trade deadline. Boston did diddly squat. They got Addison Reed. And the Yankees went out and they got Sonny Gray. They got Jamie Garcia. They picked apart the White Sox, Todd Frazier, some bullpen arms. Oh, and they've got, you know, that lineup still. They still got Aaron Judge, who, even though he slowed down significantly, is still the far and away favorite to win the American League Rookie of the Year award. The Yankees have put themselves not only in a great place to secure a playoff berth, either if it's, you know, at the bare minimum one of the wild card spots, probably the number one wild card spot, but they put themselves in a really good spot to charge after Boston in the East itself. They've swapped places quite frequently throughout the season so far. As of right now, Boston has a 3-game lead over New York because the Yankees have cooled off a little bit here. But they've done some good things. With regards to the trade deadline, and that just, you know, as someone who doesn't like seeing the Yankees do well, drives me absolutely up the wall. Because I'd like it if they didn't do so hot. But here we are. Right now, the Mariners are, or the Yankees are currently controlled number one spot, are easily within striking distance of the American League East crown. They have a run differential of plus 115, which is the third highest in Major League Baseball behind the Dodgers and the Astros, and one run better than the Diamondbacks, who are sitting there at plus 114. So there's a lot to like about what New York's doing if you're a Yankees fan. They're positioned well for the future. Gray is under club control, if I remember correctly, until 2019, and I think Garcia's got a few more years in him as well. No real rentals were made. Frazier might have been, but that's about it. They built a – Cashman has done a fantastic job, and I'm trying to shed the Yankee heat chicken here. But Cashman has done an absolutely great job. He rebuilt the farm system in a couple of years, especially with the trade deadline last year, the fire sale that he did. And as a result, the Yankees farm system is one of the top five in baseball. Oh, and the big league club is sitting there at 59 wins and 3 games out of their division. That SOB. Doing his job and doing it well. There might be a case for Brian Cashman to win the Executive of the Year award in Major League Baseball, because he's done, and I keep hammering on this because it's true, some amazing work with that roster and that farm system. Boston, on the other hand, you just kind of have to sit there and shake your head. They have some real concerns in their bullpen. Outside of Chris Sale, their starting staff has been inconsistent and hasn't had a lot of depth, has had some issues eating up innings. David Price has been okay, but he hasn't been great. He's been good, but he hasn't been great. And there's some real issues that needed some shoring up. It would have been nice for them to pick up another spot starter / long reliever to eat up some innings. To give them some flexibility, especially heading in September and into the 40-man call-up period. But instead, they kind of stood pat, didn't do anything. And it's become a situation where Boston, if things don't go right for them in September, and also the Yankees do overtake them, because the Yankees have more depth at the farm level, despite losing Michael Pineda, the Yankees have more depth in their current Major League roster. It's something you have to be interested to see what's going to happen with the Boston media if everything goes to hell in a handbasket for the Red Sox. So as that's where we're at for the first broadcast in over almost a year for Sports with Neil and Friends. So tonight was just me, Sports with Neil. It wasn't just me, Neil, coming to you from the Everett, Washington area. We discussed Mariners, we discussed the playoff race. It was a pleasure talking with you guys. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you all have a great evening. Thank you again.